Jeff Green wants Democrats to vote for him in the August primary for Florida governor. Don't know who he is? Well, he's hoping that changes, and quickly. With a net worth of close to $4 billion, Green is ready to put his own capital to get his name out there. But with less than a month before voters go to the polls, is a deep personal war chest enough? Jeff Green joins us now. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Ryan. Thank you very much for having me.
So let's start with the obvious. You've been very fortunate in your life, and to say that you could live a comfortable life is an understatement. Why throw your hat in the ring for public service?
Well, you know, we've never met, so I'll tell you a little something about myself. I mean, I grew up in Massachusetts, middle class. We were very comfortable. My dad owned his own business, and my mom is a stay-at-home mom. In the late 60s, when I was 14 years old, all the textile mills left New England, and my dad lost his livelihood and lost everything. And my parents moved to West Palm Beach. And my dad, to make ends meet, had to get a vending route. He was driving a truck around, and I used to help him out as a teenager, heavy cases of Coke, carrying it four at a time in the van and loading him in one can at a time. And my mom, who never really had to do much work, took a job as a waitress and was working late at night at banquets at the Breakers Hotel. And, you know, I saw how our own family's fate changed, you know, from being a very comfortable middle-class home family with a backyard and house and to living in a small apartment and really struggling. And it's always given me a deep understanding of what it's like for people whose circumstances can change. And, you know, I have been the luckiest guy in the world, but I really feel like with that luck comes, and the fortune I've been able to accumulate comes not only an obligation, but the privilege to really make a big difference in other people's lives. And so that's why I've decided to throw my hat in the ring and hopefully become the next governor of Florida.
So all of your opponents announced last year, I think the latest was former Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine in November of last year. The others, Winter Park businessman Chris King, former Congresswoman Gwen Graham, and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum were in the first part of 2017. You announced very late. I mean, what do you think gives you a realistic chance of getting the nomination? They've had all this time to introduce themselves to voters and...
Well, they have. They've had a lot of time, that's for sure. And I have to tell you something. We've been watching the race, and the leader of the race, as of when we got in June, and as of today even still, I think, is undecided. Mm-hmm. So none of these candidates have been able to inspire the electorate. Believe me, if one of those candidates had really... you know, had really gotten the electorate excited and, you know, had we had the wherewithal and the ability to win this race, I probably wouldn't have gotten into the race, but they have it. And, you know, I want to make a big difference. I know I can make a big difference in Floridians' lives.
Almost half are undecided, according to some of these polls. I think the latest was 47%, 46%.
I mean, there's so many polls, but I can tell you that we are getting our message out. I'm working, as I always have all of my life, I will work harder than any other candidate. I will march around everywhere in Florida and meet as many Floridians as possible. And I will spend the money it takes to get my message out. And the message is very simple. You know, 20 years of Florida Republican governors have failed the people of Florida. And, you know, you look at our education system. I mean, we're U.S. News and World Report, it's not a secret, 40 in the country. Quality of pre-K education, 43 in the country. You know, we are failing our children, and we need to make major changes in our kids' education, and that will lead to the higher wages so Florida families can finally get the raise that they deserve. And it'll lead to, you know, to criminal justice problems being less and less. We have to make some big changes in the way we run our state. And I'm going to win the primary, win the election, and start to make those changes.
So what you recently told the Miami Herald in a profile that you would be offering funding to other candidates in competitive races if you were to get the nomination. What has been the response from Democratic circles or within Democratic circles about that?
Everybody's calling me all of a sudden. I don't know. why is that? I don't understand. Now, look, I mean, I've always supported a number of candidates. It's not a secret. It's public information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've supported a number of congressional candidates and, you know, Hillary Clinton. And so it's something that my wife and I do as Democrats anyway. What I said was, if I'm the nominee, obviously I'm going to be laser focused at that point on, you know, how am I going to have the biggest impact for the people of Florida? Well, obviously, with a Republican House and Senate, it'll be a lot harder. So I will work equally hard to win those down-ticket races, and I have the financial resources to do it. And also, even if you're the candidate, you can include candidates with you at, you know, as you run around the state and in their districts and try to make a difference. Because, you know, I really believe Florida is not a swing state. It's not a purple state. It's a blue state that has just been outspent by the Republicans election after election after election. And I think we're going to make that change, and we're going to finally have a government that represents the people really want in Florida, which is, you know, is a government that takes care of the needs of the most vulnerable. I mean, look, as I said, you know, I started with nothing. You know, I worked, I went to public schools, graduated public high school. When I went off to Johns Hopkins for my undergraduate school, I got, not only did I have student loans and scholarships, but I had a government-funded work-study program where I could sit outside the gym 15 hours a week and check IDs and do my studying and still get through college. And I had the benefit of government helping me to make it through a difficult time. And I think we have turned the backs on people in Florida, our little kids all the way through college to, you know, and I think that's what we will have a responsive government and when Jeff Green is governor.
How much are you actually willing personally to self-finance this campaign, especially even though there is a large proportion of Democratic voters that are at this point in time undecided? You've got kind of the progressive energy is coalescing behind Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, and then you have kind of the more establishment wing of the party seems to be coalescing behind Gwen Graham to a certain extent. How much money are you willing to put in of your own capital?
Well, first of all, I don't agree that any of that progressive or any of these parts of the party are coalescing on anybody. I don't think anyone's, they're in the teens. No one has any big support. So I think it's a wide open race. What I'm willing to do is, you know, put my money where my mouth is. I'm willing to fund whatever it takes. I mean, I'm not going to throw money away. I'd like to spend as little as possible, whatever is needed to really get him the message out, the message of someone who's going to go to Tallahassee, is going to fight for ordinary Floridians. Finally, nobody's been doing this for 20 years. That's why Floridians, the wages, look what wages are. I mean, when you look at the statistics, 25% of children don't have health care. They're living in poverty in this state. Unacceptable.
So on issues of policy, a big one here in Northeast Florida is the deep water dredging of the St. Johns River. It's already basically underway with its first phase with the help of some federal funds, but it will cost way more before the project is finished. Jacksport city and state leaders on both sides of the aisle have argued that the dredge is needed for our port to be competitive as ships grow larger. But environmentalists worry the ecological consequences could be dire. As governor, how would you balance the supposed economic advantages with a project like this with the worries of flooding and environmental degradation?
Well, there's no question we have to protect our environment. I will be the fiercest fighter against offshore drilling. And we have to do what we have to take care of this problem with Lake Okeechobee and the green sludge. I mean, this is just, it's frightening. And I mean, what we have in Florida, look, let's face it, we are a tourist state and we're a retiree state. You know what? We can't be a green sludge and oil-filled beach state or we're going to be out of business. So the environment has to be, you know, protected. But by the same token, you know, we have to recognize our strengths. And one of our great strengths is that we're the gateway to Latin America, Panama Canal Widening. And there are those bigger boats are going to be coming. So we want them coming into Florida. So, of course, the port has to be able to accommodate those giant ships. And I think it's a smart move to do it. Because, look, we have not invested in our children. We haven't invested in our infrastructure in this state. I mean, you know, when you look at mass transit, it's among the worst in the country. And when, you know, you wonder why are we not getting the high wage jobs? Well, you know, what do people look at when they're moving a company to a state? They look first thing they probably say is, well, what are the schools like for my kids and my employees' kids? And they see, well, we're 40th in this country. Well, next state, please. Then they look at infrastructure. Hey, you know, what's it like getting around? You know, what's my quality of life? Am I sitting in my car? You know, I mean, I think we have to recognize, too, that, you know, the projection is, you know, if we don't have any, God forbid, environmental disaster, our population is supposed to go from 20 to 26 million in the next 22 years. So I, you know, I can tell you that You know, in a lot of most cities in this state, 30% more cars on the road, it'll become unlivable. It'll be like the worst place in the world. And we don't need to become a New York City traffic jam. So we need to invest in infrastructure, our ports, our bridges, our rail, and we have to make this, you know, the great state that it should be.
So moving on to education, the Duval County School District, according to the school board, has been hit here particularly hard by recent mandates like the school safety bill requiring safety officers and beefing up security. The funding in that bill passed last session after the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, but it wasn't recurring. And the school board is actually asking, as part of its legislative agenda, asking the legislature to make it recurring. Would you support making that funding an annual allocation?
Absolutely. I mean, we're in Palm Beach County. I was just meeting with our superintendent last month, and he can barely fund the schools he has now. I mean, we're spending so little on our kids' education, and now he's asked to take money out of the budget to pay for security. So, you know, we need to have real security in our schools. It'll be something that I'm going to focus on, because let's face it, when you're the governor, the buck stops with you. And I'm not going to sit back and allow our kids to be, you know, used for target practice by shooters who just can walk in the door. So we have to have, much better security, and we have to fund it. And then we can't take it out of the meager budgets we now have, which already have to be increased for kids' education.
So broadly speaking, a lot of area education leaders here in Duval County and Northeast Florida, more broadly speaking, are concerned with the state of funding levels for traditional public schools. A bill passed last year makes it easier for outside operators to take over managing low-performing schools, and many see this as an attack on traditional public schools. What would be your education policy as governor as it relates to bringing school grades up and the balance of school choice options and traditional public schools?
Look, I mean, 20 years of Republican governors, these guys, and they've all been men, these 20 years of Republican governors have declared war on public education. And you know what? The statistics show that they've won the war. The war is not going on anymore because, you know, I've looked at the numbers. The numbers speak for themselves. If, you know, one thing is I know a little about an education, and I have three little boys, 4, 6, and 8 years old. And I can tell you, prior to third grade, kids learn to read. After third grade, kids read to learn. Our third graders, only 56% are at the third grade reading level. And I can tell you, I was upset to hear that. But then when I looked at some new statistics, as I've learned more and more about education in Florida, by the 12th grade, only 35% of the kids are at the 12th grade reading level. And you know what it is in math? It's 48% in grade 4, 29% in grade 8. Only 19% of seniors in high school are at the 12th grade math level. So our public schools are failing. The last thing we need to do is take money out of our public school budgets for experimental for-profit schools with no rules. You know, if people want to go out and start a private school with their own money, great, as long as they're following the rules and they're educating our kids. But we can't take a penny out of our public schools. We don't have a penny to spare.
So this is only connected to education because of the unfortunate reality of school shootings. But there is a divide in the state. Florida is a very diverse state. They have diverse opinions. Campaigning in North Florida, in Northeast Florida in particular, is going to be different than in South Florida. Here, the idea of gun control, so to speak, or putting more limits or regulations on guns seem to pull very unpopular. Meanwhile, in places like Miami, that could actually be a more popular or more denser urban areas could be a more popular policy. How do you balance that? What are your opinions on that moving forward? Because it doesn't seem like the movement that was sparked by the tragedy in Parkland is going anywhere. They will be back at the legislature again next year.
Well, look, these kids at Parkland are, you know, they're heroes. I mean, and they've really already got at least they got one something done. But I can tell you, I'm not interested in polls. I mean, I'm interested in safety for our children. I have three young kids, and I have to tell you something. My wife and I have to worry. I mean, it's a new worry in our lives. You take, when I take the kids to school. So I don't care if you're in Jacksonville or if you're in Miami or if you're in Gainesville or if you're in Titusville. You know, you're taking your kids to school. You want to know they're safe, and they need to be safe. And I can tell you that nobody can tell me that they need to have a military-style weapon that fires off 50, 60 rounds a minute, you know, to exercise their Second Right Amendment to defend themselves. And I think they have no place in our streets. And I can tell you, as governor, I would absolutely fight to ban the sale of assault rifles and any military-style weapons. So, look, if you want to file a military-style weapon, join the Army. You can drive a tank. You can fly a fighter jet in the Air Force. There's lots of things you can do, but not on the streets of Florida. Never should happen. Never should have happened. It's the NRA is responsible for all of these tragedies. They've really taken over our government and allowed the purchase of these crazy weapons by people who should never have gotten a hold of them.
So moving on to health care, Northeast Florida especially is one of the regions of the state where the health care industry itself is very large. A state and local federal funding match program called the Low-Income Pool, or LIP, was renewed by the Trump administration last year. The Obama administration had hoped to axe it, saying that if Florida passed Medicaid expansion, the program that helps reimburse hospitals for uncompensated care would be duplicitous. However, even with the renewing of LIP, it's now uncertain whether hospitals will be able to make up their portion of the match to draw down the federal funds, including UF Health in Jacksonville. They say these dwindling funds could see them shut their doors one day in the future, and they're calling for Medicaid expansion. As governor, are you prepared to reignite that debate over this particular policy?
No, I don't want to run out of debate. I want to immediately have this Medicaid expansion. I mean, $4 billion was offered to us, which would have provided Medicaid for a large number of Floridians who otherwise don't have health insurance at all. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have the number in the top of my head. I think it's as a percentage of poverty level is like 0.8%, and then it goes to 1.32% of poverty level Floridians can get access to Medicaid. So of course we should take this money. I mean, we've sent this money to Washington. Why are we? How stupid is that? We send our money to them, and then we say, well, we don't want to get it back to take care of health insurance for our ordinary citizens who desperately need it. So I will absolutely fight to get Medicaid expansion on track as it should have been put on track the day it was that the Affordable Care Act was passed.
Attorney General Pam Bondi recently joined another lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act. I believe it was five other states as well. Now, of course, she's going to be independent, or whoever is going to be in the AG's position will be independent of the governor's control. But as governor and being part of the cabinet, there is a certain amount of influence there. What are your opinions about these lawsuits that Florida enters, and moving forward, what steps do you think that you might be able to take as governor to kind of craft a different direction for this type of agenda?
Well, look, you know, we need a leader who basically understands that the role of government's not a business. It's a service to take care of people who are the most vulnerable. And, I mean, as a federal government, we can spend $2 trillion on wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, but we have in the state of Florida something like 280,000, you know, kids without health insurance. So, you know, we have our work cut out for us, but I can tell you, as a leader of the state, as governor, I will set the right tone. And the tone is that we are not going to leave the most vulnerable behind so we can give big corporate welfare checks to random companies who are going to come create 10 jobs and then leave. So we will take care of Floridians and make sure that, because healthcare is not a privilege. It's a right. It's a right. It's an absolute right in this country. We're not, you know, the fact of the matter is everybody gets health care anyway. The problem is we instead of doing it the way we should be in providing affordable, decent quality health care, we're relegating those who are most economically challenged to emergency rooms, which is not the same level of health care. I'm sure a number of your listeners have been to emergency rooms. It's not where you want to go get your health care. And it's much more costly. So it makes no sense. What Rick Scott has done in this Republican Senate and House in this state to ordinary Floridians is, it's shameful. It's unethical, it's immoral, and it's wrong. And I will stand up for ordinary Floridians. That's why I'm running for governor, because it's time that they have a voice in Tallahassee.
So in the last few moments that we have, what would you tell a voter here in Jacksonville or in Northeast Florida? What do you think that they would need to hear in order to, let's say they're undecided, maybe they're not even a Democrat, but they're thinking towards the possibility of you being the nominee in the general election. What do you think you need to let them know in order for them to support you?
Sure. Well, look, if you're a Democrat, I would say this. Don't hold it against me that I'm a billionaire and that I started with nothing and made all this wealth. Look, I mean, a lot of people are trying to poke fun at it. I mean, I worked very hard my whole life. And the fact of the matter is, my number one goal is to give back. I grew up in Massachusetts in the shadow of the Kennedys, and I was raised to think that doing good for others is the greatest privilege you can have in making a difference in people's lives. That's what I want to do. And I can tell you that you can, you know, the other four candidates are all, none of them are clowns or anything, they're all capable people. But, you know, I'd say to every Democrat, look objectively at all of our resumes, backgrounds, accomplishments, and make your own decision. I think if you do objectively, you'll see that I'm the guy who really, the candidate who has really gotten the most done in his life, will get the most done Floridians, and also, you know, will put up what it takes to fight against the Republicans. This every election we go in these elections, we're all excited about our candidates, and you know what? The Democrats, as Democrats, we get outspent 2.5-1 in the last election, and what happened? Rick Scott won by 1%. So that's not going to happen. When Jeff Green is the nominee in November, this November, we will spend whatever it takes to go toe-to-toe with these Republicans, not to buy votes, but to get our message out, to get the winning Democratic message out that we want to build an economy in a state that takes care of every single Floridian, not just the big corporations that Rick Scott has taken care of during his 8 years in office.
Jeff Green, thank you for joining us here at WJCT.
Thank you very much for having me, Ryan.